Joining us on the phone right now is Shelly Kulia. And Shelly is a, I guess, is it too simple to say you're the queen of monarchs in the state of Wisconsin, Shelly? Is that?
Actually, it's a very good definition for me. I am obsessed with monarchs, but the reason I'm here today is to talk about the importance of pollinator gardens, which of course include monarchs, to the health and well-being of birds. Because without all of these insects that are drawn to pollinator gardens, our birds have nothing to eat. They thrive on bugs. So some people don't know that the bird population in North America has dropped significantly for many reasons, but the biggest is loss of habitat due to human development. So while this is distressing, we can all help. We can plant pollinator flowers and try to eliminate chemical use in our yards, and that's going to bring the bird population back, and actually just we're going to enjoy life more, aren't we? So I'd just like to begin by explaining native flowers, plants, trees, bushes. If they're native, you are going to find birds in all this environment. Why are they in the trees and the bushes and in the flowers? They're eating seeds of flowers, but they're also eating the insects. People don't really realize that. The drama that you can see in your garden between birds and bugs is extremely entertaining. So when you plant the right flowers, you will immediately see butterflies. So for years, I planted my beautiful hybrid tea roses and my geraniums and petunias. I never had a butterfly. I never had a bee. And I never understood this until it made clear to me that this is junk food for our pollinators and our birds, all of our wildlife. Why is it junk food? It's not native. That nectar of these hybridized flowers is useless, and it's actually depriving, you know, not only the pollinators but the birds of sustenance. So I'm not telling folks out there to not to plant roses and geraniums. You have to have your favorite flowers. Everyone is entitled to that. But I would ask you to plant a few pollinator flowers in your yard. As soon as you do, you will instantly see more activity with butterflies and birds. So I guess I would start with heirloom flowers. Whatever you buy, make it an heirloom or a heritage flower. That has the richest nectar. That's going to draw the biggest amount of pollinators. One of my favorite things that I start collecting right now is going to the garden centers and getting the seed packets for zinnias for the heirloom or heritage. They're rare. Try to go now. You might find them. You will be rewarded in the summer. It's always late with these types of flowers, but they last longer. It's July when they're blooming. These heirloom zinnias are magnificent. They get up to 3 feet tall. You want the lily-like, not the big pom-pom, but like a flat lily. And not only are they hardy and strong, they have no diseases. None of the native plants do. But this isn't native. This is actually from South America, zinnias. But the pollinators love this particular heirloom flower. So there are many other plants that will give you instant gratification. Catmint, Walker's Low Catmint, is a favorite of goldfinches. They land on the flower. You don't know how the flower can sustain it because they're wispy. And he will sit there all day eating the little seeds. Hummingbirds also love the catmint. They don't eat the seeds. Of course, they're a pollinator. Blue delphiniums. They grow beautifully up here. They last, first of all, that you get two blooms. So the first bloom is about 6 weeks, and then you have to wait for maybe another month and you get another gorgeous bloom. But the hummingbirds and the finches love delphiniums. Cosmos, which is an annual, the finches eat the, not only the seeds, but the petals. They sit and pluck off the petals. Now, that might be annoying to a gardener, but it's extremely fun to watch this action. Salvia, it comes in perennial or in annual. Both are loved by the birds and the hummingbirds. Hummingbirds, of course, that are pollinating. And as far as trees and shrubs, I have two linden trees in my yard, which when they bloom, the nectar is just divine. And pollinators are just swarming, but so are the birds. So the birds are in these trees. There's so much activity. But one of the most dramatic things I ever saw was the end of August, and this gorgeous red male cardinal swooped down and plucked off a teeny tiny wren. It happened so quickly, I couldn't even believe it. I'd never seen anything like this. And then the wren escaped, and guess what it was? A monarch. It was the height of the migration. And, of course, nature knows everything that's going on. And these birds, not only are they waiting there for all the wonderful insects that are pollinating, they're waiting for that migration. And there's now, there used to be thousands, but now there's hundreds of migrating monarchs down from Canada and upper Wisconsin and that area at the end of August in my yard. And you know what? That bird is entitled to that monarch if he can get him. That's nature. It's okay. But just trying to explain to all your listeners how important bugs are, pollinating bugs. And by the way, 99% of all insects are beneficial. So one favorite bush or tree, my two service berries, I think are bushes, but they're as tall as trees. They're magnificent. And the robins and the cedar wax wings just live in these trees for the 6 weeks that they're producing these gorgeous red berries. The squirrels are also there, but that's okay. They all work together. And one fun thing is, did you know that there is a night shift for pollinators? People don't know that moths and bats pollinate. And in fact, moths are a bigger pollinator for each moth than a honeybee. So moths, of course, like all pollinators, are in trouble, but they have a double whammy because they're getting that light pollution from humans that's messing them up as well. But I have to tell you, this I did get on video. I have a video of a sparrow that found a moth during the day in my ground cover. And this moth was almost as big as this sparrow, but he did eat it. And I couldn't believe it. You will be forever entertained if you add some of these flowers to your yard. Now, here's a fun idea, a pop-up pollinator garden for those of you who don't feel really good about it, but maybe you would plant a few of these. Just pick a place in your yard with full sun. Maybe it could be as small as 2 feet by 2 feet, very small. And pick these three plants. Now, these are, well, I have so many favorites, but these are my three favorites. Plant one milkweed plant. Milkweed has gotten a terrible rap because people think it's a weed. It is not. It's an edible herb, edible to humans, and, of course, beneficial to so many insects, and the monarch can't live without it. So plant one milkweed. You can either do the common, which we're used to seeing, the tall 3 foot. By the way, when that blooms, the nectar is completely divine, and the honeybee will go to that milkweed flower before it will go anywhere else in your garden. It's the place to be. But the other one is the butterfly weed, which is orange. And both of those are great. As soon as you plant it, you will immediately have monarch eggs. That is positive. So you're already helping the monarch. But the second one is purple cone flowers. This is a perennial herb, again, just like the milkweed. We could eat it, but of course we don't. It's echinacea, actually. It's the same height as milkweed, about 3 feet tall. It draws goldfinches, purple finches, house finches all year round. If you leave these dead heads up through the winter, like I have, you will have finches on those dead heads plucking out the seeds until, you know, next March. And then my absolute favorite that I can't live without, and everyone who plants it just is as thrilled as I am. This is an annual. Not many people know it. It's called the Verbena bonariensis. This annual gets to be 3 feet tall. It has a blue pom-pom at the end of this long stem. Yeah, I call it my Dr. Seuss flower. It looks so funny. And it is so divine. You will not believe the butterflies on this plant. You won't believe it. I have a video of a giant swallowtail on this verbena, and a monarch is dive bombing him to get him off of his territory. So it's just, it's exciting. It blooms late in July, so that's disappointing, but it lasts through frost. And here's a bonus. It's an annual that self-seeds, so it will come back. You don't have to really buy it again. I do just because I'm nervous that maybe it won't come back, but it always has for me. Also, native plants are deer and rabbit resistant, so you don't have the problems that you do with your roses, you know, being eaten by rabbits. And then one other key component of this effort is to let your lawn go natural. I know it's hard. People love their perfect lawns. These chemicals are killing not only our pollinators, but our birds. The clover and the dandelions that are herbs, we can eat them. And man has eaten dandelions and clover for, you know, eons. These are the first pollinator of every bee and butterfly of the spring. But I didn't realize, because I always had a chemical lawn up until many years ago, I had no idea that the rabbits and the deer absolutely love dandelions and clover. I have videos of rabbits. They look like they're drunk. They will lay all day in my clover lawn, eating it, sleeping it on it. The deer and the fawn love the dandelions. But who knew? This is the biggest surprise of all. The purple finches. When the dandelions are in bloom, I have flocks of purple finches, and they fight. Again, they're territorial. They eat every seed. They devour the dandelions. And it's something, you know, I never saw as a child, even though I grew up in a yard that had no chemicals. We didn't have that many dandelions or clover, but of course I wasn't noticing, but I've never seen anything like it. The other thing with your lawn, if you could let some area of your lawn go no mow, where you just don't mow it, then the insects can live in there. And birds like bluebirds can dive in and get their insects, feed their chicks. We now have nesting bluebirds, which we had tried to get for years, but we did not get these nesting bluebirds. We get two broods a summer. We did not get these bluebirds until we stopped the use of chemicals. And, of course, we have all these lightning bugs now. And remembering that, you know, insects are good. 99% of all insects are good for our environment. And we just don't understand their importance to, you know, all different levels of life in our world. So I guess I would just say if you go online to Google and type in native plants of Wisconsin, you'll get a big, long list. When I give my lectures, I always give out handouts with these, but of course I can't today. And you can also go to the DNR Wisconsin website, and maybe Marty will post these on the website. I'm not sure if you can do that, but I want everyone to at least try this Verbena bonariensis. It's just the most thrilling annual you can have in your yard.
Get the Verbena, and then just everybody just let the lawn grow and enjoy yourself a nice salad of clover and dandelion. That's basically what you're saying, right, Shelley?
I love that. I'm with you. Whenever you want to go for lunch this summer, I'm ready.
She is the pollinator pro. That is Shelley Kulia. And again, Shelley, folks can check out Native Plants. You can get that at dnr.wisconsin.gov. And again, real quick, the two personal flowers that you love the best that people should go out and get this spring would be?
Well, of course, milkweed, one. Purple coneflowers, which is echinacea, and the Verbena bonariensis. And you may have to ask, I don't know what it's like in your area. I always order mine because they never bring it in. So I would ask you to call your nurseryman with that flower request. It's 3 feet tall. Verbena come in all different sizes. This is the heritage. This is the best. This is the favorite of all pollinators.
Ms. Shelley, we thank you for your time and continue the great work on pop-up pollinator gardens everywhere.
Oh, thanks so much, Marty.